Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 11th of February. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Hansby.
It's all right for you, Kev, there down in Cape Town. How's your week been?
Yeah, I've done more work this week than I've done in the last 3 weeks, I think. So don't give me this. It's all right for you down in Cape Town.
I meant the weather more than that. I know you've had a mental week, busy-wise. I haven't had a really donker of a week in terms of business. I've just felt like I haven't had time to breathe, so... Tell me what's it been like, you know, what's your observations been really?
It's been good. There's a lot of people here, a lot more people than there was last week or last year, I should say. And I think there's just a buzz. There's a lot of projects going about, you know. I think what's happened over the last 10, 15 years is the majors have not gone on and developed a huge number of projects because they just didn't fit the criteria. And I think there's a lot of juniors that have picked up some of those projects along the way. And they're now progressing steadily. And, I think we're going to see big moves from those juniors because of it. And obviously the copper has been an exciting play. Everyone's talking about copper. Whereas last year, I think if you remember, everyone was talking about lithium. Not so much this year because of the collapse in the price. But we're still going to need the stuff. And without doubt, it will recover, I think. But copper seems to be the story. Copper and also gold as well. So, yeah, let's see what happens. I mean, I think the resource sector is in such a position now for people to have major gains over the next 3 years. I don't think many people are saying to me they've never seen a situation like this.
Yeah.
Where the metal prices are so high, and yet the junior sector in the mining sector is bombed out. It's like something's going to happen. Either metal prices collapse to counter the share prices, or... which seems much more likely that the junior prices are going to have to come up. But we'll say
some sort of correction in the valuation of these companies. Absolutely. All right, well, we've got a long show this week. So let's move on to our first guest this week and something a little different. We're joined by Tim Cooper, life coach and mentor. Welcome to the roast, Tim.
Phil, thanks for having me, mate. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. So I always look on websites. I think it's always a good starting point. And this is a quote. It's, "I'm just a guy from Enfield in North London that finally decided to step up." That's the simple truth of the matter. "I was lost, overwhelmed, and succumbing to temptation. My vision is clear: to go back and help millions of people who find themselves in the position that I once was." So tell the listeners what that position was, Tim, and walk us through that potential lost and desperate person and some background as to what caused it.
Yeah, that was a very dark place for me. And there was a moment in time where I was going through an extremely messy divorce. I'd invested a lot of time, money, energy, and effort into the relationship. I walked in on New Year's Eve and found her in bed with her best friend, which was a male, by the way. And in that moment, it was just a real life defining, changing moment for me. I've been brought up to, I suppose, you know, not put your back up against a wall, but to come out fighting. That's the sort of character that I, you know, and values that my parents have installed into me. And I don't just mean in terms of, you know, physically, I mean in terms of mental resilience. And in that moment, I had to use the latter because there was a part of me that's like, well, I'm probably going to do something silly. And I did, but just not in that moment because I parked it. I buried it to some extent. And it started to take toll on me quite a lot. I turned to drugs quite heavily. I ended up spending about £90,000 or so within 6 months on cocaine. I had a sex addiction. I was sleeping with prostitutes every other night. I was on dating websites, all that stuff. Alcohol wasn't that bad, but, you know, didn't really matter because I have the drug thing. And I went to take my life twice. I lost quite a lot of money. In that moment, I was in business with my ex-father-in-law. We had a solar company. We also had a car storage company at that time as well. You know, they were getting me to sign stuff for 2 years to sort of take me out of, let's just say, deals and agreements as such. And then I found myself coming out with not a lot of money, about 100 grand, just to sort of set me up, get me going. You know, I chucked that down the drain very, very fast because I was in such a dark place.
Yeah.
I remember there's a few defining moments, but this was definitely one of them. I remember I was trying to ring the dealer up for more gear. And he wasn't answering the phone. I was ringing another one, And I went to throw the phone at the wall. As I turned, I caught the TV, and there was a UNICEF advert. And there was this little black boy, and he was basically pissing in this little stream. And then the cameraman panned to the left, and there was a little girl scooping it out with a Tupperware or a milk carton. And something really just hit me in that moment, Phil, and it was a moment of realization, a moment of stop playing the victim, a moment of gratitude for the position I was in. And in that moment, I sort of had about three, I think it's about just over $3,000 left in my account. And I send it all. I send it all in that moment to UNICEF, because it touched me so much. And you know, the truth is, Phil, I'd love to say that I didn't know where I was going to eat and stuff, but I would have just gone around my mum's, right? So, but it was still a moment where I changed the almost the narrative that I was running for such a long time.
Yeah,
that was a part of the puzzle where I said to myself, I need to go back and help people in the position I once was, and I wish it was plain sailing from that decision, from that moment, but it never is. That's when the work starts, you know, when it gets tough. And it was tough for me, and it's, you know, it was a journey that I was on for, you know, nearly a year, up and down, in and out, good days, bad days. But finally I found the courage, resilience and determination to push through it, mate.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that from a lot of people who suffered from, you know, things like addiction, who have to hit the rock bottom to be able to then bounce back. And, it, you know, that happens in a lot of addiction, doesn't it? People realize they've got a problem with something. They have to hit that period of absolute, that, you know, they're almost down and out. It sounded like you know, to find your wife having an affair, to then obviously everybody blamed it. It's like, woe is me, you know, they turn to alcoholism or they turn to cocaine or whatever it is to because it acts as a crutch for them in a lot of times. And but ultimately that has driven or drove you to better your life and better yourself. So talk about on the up then, what did you then do? What steps did you take? Obviously you've talked about you're giving back to charity. You saw something that's triggered this almost like feeling of gratitude that even though you were down and out, you had an addiction, you obviously got over that and you thought, I want to make people's lives better and give something back. So talk about the steps that you then took to, you know, whether you went on training courses, did you become study psychology? I don't know, talk about the mentoring side of things and what made you go down that route.
Well, I think that the four steps is what I coach now. The very first step for me was I had to get honest with myself. That was the first step. And you talk about hitting the rock bottom, the thing that's so transformative about a place that is the deepest, darkest hole that you can get yourself in. There's only two ways to go. You either go up or that's it. You take your life and you're done. There's something that happens when you accept. And self-acceptance is the chance for you to find inner peace in yourself and to understand that you now find yourself in a position where you have to own your story. And everybody's got pieces about that they would probably not like to ever repeat again. And it's knowing that those things don't define what happens to the rest of your life. And that's something that I sort of really hooked on to hard. And when I was on the up, let's say, and I mean, if you go back to that time, you wouldn't have thought it's the up, but it was, anything was up from being so down. You know, I started to look at other people around me. I started to look at my friends, started to look at people that I knew that were, you know, that were secretly living this life, that were struggling deep down, but didn't have the courage or didn't have the vulnerability to come out and do it. And I thought to myself, there's got to be something that I can do that would put me into a position where I could not only draw on my actual experience with these other men, but that would also give me the credentials, the leverage, and also the influence to be able to guide people at a level where I could have massive impact. And so I decided to invest in my own coach from that moment. And then from there, I've had various coaches over the space of 10 years now. I worked with Tony Robbins a lot. I went and did one-to-one with Tony in Atlanta. I've had a lot of one-to-one coaching with Brendan Burchard, which is the leading high-performance coach in the world. So, you know, I'm an all-or-nothing type character, Phil. You know, so if I was going to do cocaine, I was going to do a lot of it. I was going to have the most of it. And if I was going to help people, I was going to try and do the most, and I was going to invest money into furthering and bettering myself and taking me to a place that could influence more lives, then I was going to do that to the maximum as well. And that's where I've arrived today, mate.
Yeah. So you just mentioned obviously those four pillars of success, which you break down into, as you say, four. There's the self-awareness, the vision, the habits and the action. And then there's something they call inputs V's output formula as well. Maybe you can talk about that later on, and there's sort of different strategies. But what would you say to listeners who are struggling? You know, maybe they too feel lost, you know, maybe no sense of purpose or direction. You know, is there hope? And what would you say to them? What steps could they take to improve and better their situation in life going forward?
Well, the first thing that I'd say to these people that are maybe embarking on some form of challenge right now, and it might have been for a long time, is everyone is. Some people are just better at hiding it than others. Most people are, in fact. And I've never walked into a room on any level and in any scenario where there hasn't been people in there that need help on some level. So first thing that you can do is you can take from that you're not alone. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is you do need to take personal responsibility for why you are where you are. Because if you continue to blame external factors, then your whole life will become circumstantial. So the moment that you take responsibility, you take back control. When you take control, then you put yourself in a position of power, of influence for yourself. The moment that you don't do that and you decide that, you know, you're going to let, as I say, external factors guide you, then, you know, there's no guessing to what could happen because you just can't control what happens outside of you. That would be the first step. The second step is you've got to get the courage to become vulnerable again, because within that vulnerability, within that courage are the true breakthroughs. And that's actually saying, the ego cannot come to play like it used to. I will step into fear, and whatever it takes, whatever I need to do, not will I accomplish it, but I will be open to trying it. I will give myself the chance that I need, and I will give myself the love that I need in order for me to go and attack it. And the third thing is you've got to fully commit. You've got to go all in. You cannot sit on the sidelines. You cannot dip your toes in the water. Why? Because you haven't got the time. That's the truth. You've wasted enough time. And as you know, when you don't fully go all in, you always leave room for shoulda, coulda, maybe this might have happened. If I would have just applied myself in this way, maybe that could have changed for me. And you end up, you know, this is what I say to people. If you think the bill for committing is high, you wait until you get the one for regret. Because I'm telling you, if you don't do these things, you'll always be looking back and asking yourself that I should have. And the fourth thing, to answer which are the four pillars, is you have to take intentional action into what you're doing. And there's a difference between action and intentional action. Intentional action is really specific, laser dialed, granular focused action where you know that whatever you do, it comes from a place that you have discovered aligns with what you value. That's intentional action. Anyone can just take action and tick boxes. You know, you've probably been around these people in your life at some stage, feel where people are doing stuff, but they're not really getting anywhere from doing it because they're box tickers. So intentional action is the full step. That's what I would say to somebody if they were struggling right now. Follow those steps. That's the blueprint. That's the roadmap that has taken not just myself, but thousands now of men from lost to completely clear.
Yeah. So one of those is obviously habits, which you just drill down a little bit to, but drill down into some good habits that people can form as well, because I want it to become a bit of a life hack type podcast as well. Some people can take things away that will help them to. And I think a lot of it as well on the action side of things is also the people are not happy getting out of their comfort zone, aren't they? They're happy just doing the grind, doing the minimum or doing what they're comfortable with. But actually, you do need to take those risks and that. Get out of that comfort zone sometimes and go all in, as you say, with that laser focus and do it. Otherwise, you're going to spend life regretting things, right?
Yeah, and it's totally true, mate. And the reason for that is humans are just obsessed with certainty. We love to know what we're doing, when we're doing it, why we're doing it, and the result that we're going to get because we've stepped in. And as you know, personal growth, evolution, innovation, development, improvement, all of those things really come from you not knowing what the outcome's going to be, but you're going to try and do it anyway. That is growth. You know, growth is looking at challenges and saying, when was the last time that I didn't grow from one? Which is never. Every single challenge that somebody's had in their life, whether they've, you know, been for a really bad time in terms of a relationship, lost a lot of money, lost a person in their life, lost a business, put on a lot of weight, whatever it is. There's so many lessons that you take from being in a deficit of life. And I think it's just understanding that when you try to build and form habits, It's not about what you need to be doing more of. This is where people go wrong. It's what you need to unlearn, not learn. It's what you need to let go of. It's what you need to remove and eradicate. It's because everybody's looking for this in addition. And then the challenge with that, Phil, is when you're always thinking, what's next? Let me just get to here and then I'll, you know, happiness should never be postponed ever, right? And to think that you need to arrive somewhere, get something, be with someone, achieve something in order for you to experience that in your life is a complete lie. And so if you want to build habits that really give you the foundation to be the best man that you can be, you've got to start to look at some of the things right now that are laying on top of those habits. Because the truth is, you already know what they are. We all do. We all know deep down, right, on a basic level, if I said to you, listen, Phil, I need you to pick five things that you know that you should be doing, but you're not, I guarantee that you probably pull them out right now. Or you might say, I'm doing those things, Tim, but I could definitely level up in them. I've definitely got room for improvement in these things, mate. And so it's looking at what's stopping you. That's the key.
So moving on to the success side of things, I mean, some people judge success probably on the wrong things, like, you know, having the designer watches, having the latest this and that, the iPhones, and, you know, all the materialistic things, let's say. But actually, how do you judge success? Is it basically becoming, yeah, a certain amount of that will obviously be financial freedom and, you know, not having the worry and the stress of, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, but also having time to do things, you know, giving yourself self-care, being able to go for a run when you want, mindfulness in the morning, you know, the sort of things, spending time with your family and your kids and that, which is massively important. What is it? Is it about the work-life balance, do you think, success? Or tell us how you judge success.
Well, I think for me, success is always defined by the tight alignment to your values. So if you value supercars, for example, and you've got three of them, then do you know what? You're in alignment to what you think success is, right? If you define success by spending time with your children, having the financial freedom, having a good body, feeling energized, having a great income, building a great business, then you're also successful. Success is defined by the individual that's looking at it. And this is one of the biggest challenges that we go through, is we feel like we need to validate what success is externally. You know, because what I define as success, Phil, probably isn't what you define as success. Now, we might meet somewhere in the middle on some things, but why do you think that is? Because our values align in those areas. So it's understanding what it is that brings you true fulfillment in life. I don't know what that is for your listeners, but I do know they know that deep down. And sometimes we can get pulled in different directions that take us further away from what we value. And sometimes we do that because we think there's a bigger payoff, right? So for example, you spend more time at work, you work more hours, you do more flights, you're on calls, when you know that deep down, that time, or at least some of it, is better allocated in other areas that's going to give you more satisfaction and more fulfillment. That is why you see so many people that have hit a huge financial goal, or financial success, and you look at them, and you speak to them, you're like, you're still not all right, are you? Because they've had that mentality, Phil, of I'll be happy when.
They also end up chasing the next one and going for more money. You know, it's like billionaires. Do you really need to be a billionaire? Is 100 million, you know, is tens of millions not enough? But some of the most unhappy people I've met are some of the richest, which is unbelievable, really.
Well, I tell you what, it's here's a little analogy. When a football team scores a goal, what do?
Some of them don't even change the smile. Don't even smile. They just walk to the corner and just put their hands up. That's it. Or maybe don't. They'll just walk away.
Right. The people that are really infused by the game, love what they do, happiest in the team, they will run to the corner flag, take their shirt off. They won't even care about getting a yellow card.
Yeah.
And they'll do their little dance and everybody will go and join them. And then they'll come back to the center spot. And this is the defining moment. So many entrepreneurs, so many high-level individuals think that if they celebrate, there's complacency. Well, you can't become complacent in a celebration because it's there for that. It's not like you score a goal and then 10 seconds later, the ref's putting the ball back down on the center spot and you're still celebrating in the other team's half, but they've scored. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
That's specifically there for that moment, right? And so you need to take that, use it, and then say to yourself when you get back in your own half, okay, because you don't want, because on the flip side, you don't want the weeds to grow.
Yeah.
You don't want to celebrate for too long. But what you do want to realize is that there must be a pattern and a formula for your happiness. And you might say, do you know what, Tim? For me to be in alignment with my values and happy, I only need to celebrate for 10 seconds when I score. Well, good on you. Congratulations, you've found your sweet spot. For me, it might be longer. Who knows?
Well, I think we're all guilty. I think, to be honest, we go on and on about disasters or you know, the opposite of success is failures. We know we mourn them for potentially up to a month or weeks. But the wins, the big wins, we celebrate for maybe an evening or a day and half a day, and that's it. And actually, we should be spending more time celebrating the wins, forgetting the failures, to be honest, but learning from the failures ultimately.
Well, what are the wins? Let's look at the wins. What do you get when you score? Excitement, yeah. Enthusiasm. You get the result that you was looking for in that moment, which was scoring a goal. And if you score many goals within a certain period of time, what do you then get? You win the game, right? So it's understanding that the celebration isn't for you to take the foot off the gas. It's imperative for you to push harder back on. I'll give you another perfect example. This is an analogy I use all of the time. So Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen, Abu Dhabi, that last race. How did Max win it? What happened? It was all won on a pit stop.
Yeah.
It was all won on a pit stop. And that is the exact same analogy that high-level individuals should be looking to replicate themselves. Because you can go around the track and you can put in hot laps and you can do 40 laps at high-level pace. But if you don't come in at some stage and look at your tires, collaborate with your team, get the information back on the car, start to look at your brakes, start to refuel, then there's no way that you're going to give yourself an opportunity to win that race. Now, maybe, just maybe, you might be lucky enough to get round that race on one set of tires. But I can tell you right now from coaching thousands of men, you will not win the season. You might win that race.
Absolutely.
It's only one season, Phil, remember?
Yeah.
There's a season every year.
Yeah. It's a good analogy. I mean, I think that just, you mentioned the importance of a team there as well. I mean, you know, I think we've talked in the past about you using coaches as well, whether that be in, you know, your mentoring side of thing as well, but also maybe in your training, your, from a fitness perspective, if you want to improve yourself, whether that be on the bike or, you know, in running or marathon running, you'll hire a coach who can then, because you're always learning, and it'd be arrogant to say, well, I'm the best at it. Do you know what I mean? So talk us through that and how important it is to, from a business perspective as well, like, you know, putting the right management team in place around you who are better than you as well, ultimately.
I mean, my sort of thought process on that is no one's ever completed it. There is always somebody that you can learn from. And when you open up your mind to that way of thinking, you start to realize that the majority of the lessons that you probably need in that moment aren't from the people that you think. For example, I know you've got children. How many lessons have they taught you over the years, right? And they're only children, but they teach you different types of lessons, right? And it's understanding that when you get a coach, they can unlock different parts of you, things that you can't access on your own. You'll only take yourself to so a perfect example. Most humans are way better at doing things for other humans than they are for themselves. It's so much, even myself, Phil, it's so much easier for me to deliver this information to you on this podcast than it is to put it into practice myself. Why? Because there's a four-letter word that you can't skip when you decide to take that intentional action, and it's called work, right? And through that work process, there are many different barriers, there are many different blocks and, you know, sort of roadblocks within that journey, right away from consistency, discipline, you know, attention, focus, clarity, vision, like all of these things are things that you need to navigate when you embark on something new, like a body transformation, like a marathon, like an elite runner or an extremely long tour, you know, on a bike. You know, there's, again, to go back to real basic terms, if all of the lights went out right now in your house on this podcast and mine, we wouldn't call a plumber, we'd call an electrician. Because that's what they do. They fix and work with electricity. And I think it's almost foolish for us to think that if we are not heavily developed by psychology, we're not heavily developed by human behavior, and we're not heavily invested to learn more about that, then surely we should at least consider somebody that has dedicated their life to it, because they can then compress decades into days. That's why I have coaches, because they take a period of time that I really need to either get information back from or learn from. And it may take me 2 years, you know, and it might cost me 20 grand to drop that down to 6 months. Well, that's money well spent. So that's what I believe coaches are really good for, and mentors.
Yeah. So how does it start the process then? So somebody reaches out to you via either, you know, your website or through, you know, maybe word of mouth or even from a friend. And then you have a consultancy, you sit down with them, talk to them, listen to effectively almost like a therapist here. You let them get a lot off the chest. And then you put a plan together for them and say, look, I want you to focus on these areas, or talk about the weaknesses, talk about some of the strengths, and obviously try and play on some of those strengths to bring them out even more. Just talk us through that. So the sort of process, and if listeners are interested in talking to you and reaching out, how they can do that as well.
Yeah, so the process is pretty simple, mate. It's by invite only most of the time, and appointment only. So you have to go for it. Like, you can apply, but you can't just get in. That's just because of, I suppose, not the level that my business to, but just the amount of time that I've got with people. And I've got myself to a bit of a stage now where there's a waiting list, which is amazing, of course, for my business. Not so good for everyone.
No, it's a nice problem to have, isn't it, for you?
Yes. And I built up to that. It took me maybe 6 years to get to that. But for the last probably say 3 years, that's been the case. And I don't let everybody through. I've got a vigorous, you know, sort of a needs analysis form that people have to complete. And they're all those questions are all based around my four pillars, which is levels of commitment and getting honest and vulnerable and the intentional action. And we've worked on this a lot, me and my team, because, we know that we can have a huge impact together in people's lives that really need it. Needing it and wanting it are two different things. And so if you do, you know, decide to do that and you get through and the application becomes successful, I will jump on a Zoom call like this and we will start to talk about what it is that you think that you want. And it's... It's always the opposite to that. What you want and what you need are normally two different things. And we'll start to navigate timeframes. We'll start to look at what you need to unlearn. From that, we'll start to look at how we can give you a roadmap in order for you to achieve that, with checkpoints, make sure that we're setting work, reviewing it. I fly all over the world, Phil. This is not just something that I do from Zoom. So a lot of my stuff is in Europe, loads of stuff in Dubai and Malta and Boston. And so I'm on aeroplanes a lot because I love being in the room with someone. It's where I can really dig deep. And also we spend a lot more time when we're doing that, because obviously I'm normally flying to it. But, you know, the whole process is, and I know this is very almost coachy and salesy, but the whole process has to be extremely tailored. There is... Definitely, this is not an industry where one size fits all. And if you do try to apply that, you'll get certain results. You'll get to a certain position, but you'll never get true transformation that's everlasting. And I always say my ethos is very simple. I do not want to see you again. That's my ethos. If you work with me and we do it over 6 months to a year, I do not want to see you again. In fact, the only time that I want to see you is when I'm shaking your hand and we're talking about what amazing time you've had since we've departed with coaching. So that's the way that it works, mate.
Yeah, sounds interesting. And as you say, that can be from maybe from a personal, you know, personal life perspective. It can be from a business perspective, something they want to improve in business, or even from fitness side of things, right? In terms of coaching, in terms of, you know, the mindset of getting into habits that they can improve to improve the fitness, right?
Yeah, most, to break it down in the most simplest way, it doesn't matter what you do in life, it's the human that pulls the lever. So it doesn't matter what systems that you put in your business, doesn't matter who you're employing, doesn't matter what level you're playing at, you need to make sure that the human is on the form. And that comes down to mindset and psychology. And so if anybody's listening to this, and I feel that they're a little bit stuck in their business, they're a little bit stuck with what to do next. Maybe it's scaling, maybe it's delegating, big one that I do often. Maybe it's just general communication in their business. I can guarantee you work on yourself, and you work on yourself to a level of conviction and vulnerability, you will eradicate those things extremely fast, because you show up as a new version of you. Thus, having the influence to affect all those things in your business. That's the way that it works.
Yeah. So you also have a book as well. Congratulations. It's the Art of Unlearning book, which is obviously available from your website, timcooperacademy.com. Do you want to just talk to the listeners through the book and obviously the writing process? Because I'm also interested in that. You know, how do you plan and prepare? You know, you go through a few drafts and different copies. You brainstorm and put the ideas down each chapter. So how long a process was that?
That's my first book, actually. I'm just in the middle of my second book, which is The Psychology of Success, which is exactly what we're talking about. I've got this question a couple of times before, and whenever I answer it, people are like, wow, okay. I don't actually write my books. I dictate them. So I dictate them into an app. And the reason that I do that is because I feel that it allows me to express myself differently.
I thought you were going to say they were ghostwritten then. I'm thinking...
No. I don't have to worry about grammar, for example.
Yeah.
And also I just free flow. I suppose my ability to communicate, Phil, lies in this camera work. Yeah. It's where I'm at home the most.
Yeah.
I suppose like this is secondary to being in front of people, stage work, which I also love speaking. And so, you know, the whole writing process for me is number one is defining what you want the reader to experience from the book. Is it the journey? Is it to develop a level of discipline so they can go and do it themselves? Is it inspiration? Is it an amalgamation of all of those things? That's something that you need to get very clear on before writing a book. What's your why? You know, I know so often we hear that, but what's the point? Why are you doing it?
Yeah.
For me, it was always to inspire people and to show them that no matter where you are and how bad you think that is, there is a way out. And I know that because I've done it. And I always say this in my content that I produce on Instagram all the time, is that, you know, we can moan, blame and complain.
Yeah.
But if there is one person that you know of that has done something with their life from being in an extremely similar position to you, yeah, you have zero excuses. So for me, it was about to go back and unlock that within people and show them that it doesn't matter what you know, grades you got at school, you know, what color you are, what sex you are, how much money you got or how you was brought up, what social system you went into economically, all of that stuff. Life is defined by hunger. That's what it's defined. How much do you want it? And I wanted it hard and I still do. So that's why I wrote it. Yeah.
So what are the things that, I mean, without giving away too many spoilers for the book, because obviously I don't want to ruin chapters, but what are the main things or a couple of things that people need to unlearn? What are the bad habits maybe that they get into that gets them in that rut in the first place?
Thinking that we need more in order for our lives to become more. That's why I called it the art of unlearning, not learning. It's understanding that when you start to remove, you start to free up space. When you start to free up space, you can then start to compartmentalize where you really want to expand in your life. That's when it gets exciting. It's like going into your wardrobe right now. We've all got stuff in there where like, I should probably get shot of that. I haven't worn it for a while, or it's not really, probably don't fit me anymore. It's too old, it's this or whatever. But you go in, you open up a wardrobe and all you see is a packed wardrobe. Well, there's no space for new clothes in there. And it's exactly the same with your mind. If you've got too much clutter, there's no way that you can start to bring new amazing opportunities, things, ideas, people, situations into your life, because it's just full of the stuff that you don't need. And all of these, what I'm talking about now, are experiences. These are associations. And these are things that we've developed over years and years of repetition, both good and bad. You know, the habits that you've got in your life right now that are serving you well, they're serving you because you have repeated them often. And the ones that aren't, they're not serving you because you've also repeated those often. So it's just identifying what you need to start to remove, and then you can start to get excited about what you can replace it with.
And how much of that, Tim, is like physiological in terms of using the parts of the brain that can relearn or almost rewiring the path? It's like if you say clap your hands together, you put that hand over that hand because it feels natural. But if you did it the other way, you know, enough times, it would then become the nature or the more natural feeling. Is that something you can kind of rewire the brain with?
Yeah, you can. I mean, our brain is full of all different types of many different types of circuitry, and they fire and wire depending on our feelings, our emotions, and our experiences. And the quickest way for us to, I'll give you a perfect example. If there's something that you fear in life right now, let's just say it's fire, right? For example, you fear fire. Well, there's a strong chance, in fact, there's probably an extremely heavy chance that at some stage, as a child from the ages of 1 to 7, especially, it could have happened outside this, that you have formed an association to fire that has a negative connotation. And you might have seen something in your house on fire. You might have been burned by fire. You might have seen some form of fire or heat happening. And now you associate that with fear. And our brain associates so many different things with the actual thing that we really need to get rid of. So for example, if it's fire, the smell of fire, the heat from fire, the sound of fire, fire engines, you know, lighters, all of this stuff. You're like, I don't use a lighter. I just use my, oh, no, I don't like that. No, don't put them, you know. So the only way that we can do that, the only way that we can reprogram what we do is to put ourselves in a very, very, very similar environment and then experience the same thing, but differently. It's the only way that we can do it. So for example, if you are scared of spiders, the only way that you're going to break through that fear is you got to be around a spider, unfortunately.
Face the fears, as they say.
You got to face it. And when you're with that spider, you'll soon realize that it's not going to kill you. And it might run up your arm. That might feel unbelievably uncomfortable. And it's not something that you have to repeat every single day. But there is a form of repetition that if you was to continue doing it, in terms of in some form of regularity, that you will break through, and that will not become your story. And that's how you create new experiences, and don't let the old ones really dictate what you do and consume part of your brain that should be freed up for new experiences.
Okay. Interesting stuff. Very interesting. So just take us through a quick day in the life of Tim Cooper in terms of your, you know, I know you're into this whole kind of like the ice thing. I've seen some of the crazy videos, and, you know, you're in bed early, you realize the importance of sleep and rest and all the mindfulness. So just talk us through some of your healthy habits, let's say.
I mean, I'm a man, I suppose, Phil, that's always looking for that next level of efficiency. I'm always obsessed by it. I'm always, and the reason that I'm obsessed by it is I'm always thinking to myself, well, there's something that's ticking and it's the clock. And I'm like, well, how can I get more of that back? Do I have to pay for it? Maybe I need to earn more money, and maybe I need to delegate that and forget about it. Or maybe I can biohack a little bit and save myself some miles on the clock.
Yeah.
Here's a sort of rundown of, I mean, it's very, my days are very different in terms of the business setup of my day depends. But there are, I suppose, what you're, let me give you some non-negotiables, I suppose.
Yeah, I like the non-negotiables. I have them as well. Things, but go on, give us the Tim non-negotiables.
Yeah, so my first non-negotiable is just make the bed, mate. Make the bed.
Simple things. The first thing you do, isn't it? It's got to be.
It's the first task, right? And it doesn't matter what day you've had, you can go back and your bed's made, right? So for me, that's the first one. Second thing is go and hydrate. That's the second thing. Down a pint of water, half a pint of water, whatever. You've been asleep for X amount of hours. You know, your body's had no fluids in it. Go and hydrate. After that, it's do not think about it. Do something extremely uncomfortable. For me, it's jumping in an ice bath at 0.5 degrees, and more for discipline than anything else. Now, although I just mentioned, you know, some form of biohacking, yes, there's massive benefits to it. And I do feel it. I feel it with my training, my recovery. You know, I have that delayed onset muscle soreness nowhere as near as what I used to. Since the ice bath, it's phenomenal. But I find peace in the ice bath because it forces you to find it. Because if you don't, and your mind wanders, all you'll think about is how long you're in there. And when you start to think about that, the gremlins come in and it's like, I need to get out. So for me, the ice bath is extremely imperative for my daily routine. Also, that's very important to me is writing. Writing in a journal, specific questions that I answer. I believe that the quality of the questions that you ask yourself determine the quality of the emotions that you feel, and the quality of the emotions that you feel determine the quality of your life. So if you want a better life, ask yourself better questions.
Yeah.
So I'm always asking myself, you know, what am I getting excited about today? Who needs me on phone today outside of myself? Who can I help today? Well, what is a gift note sign of appreciation that I can give someone to?
Yeah. And if you do those things as well, you, when you show up for others, you're a better person to be around, aren't you? For sure. It's like the exercise routine. You, the stronger you is a better person for the people that need you, or that, you know, that you love, really, is the way I look at it.
Yeah. Physiology, you know, when men come to me to work with me, Phil, the quickest way to get a win isn't with their psychology, it's with their physiology. And the reason for that is, and I try not to work with these type of people, and if you're thinking about working with me and you're this type of person, I'm sorry, I won't work with you. And that's a logical thinker. I can't work with logical thinkers because I need somebody to show me that level of vulnerability. I need somebody to believe that there is something outside of their self. But I also understand that people need to see results as well. And it's nice to track and measure. And I do that with scoring systems.
Sure.
And scoring from 1 to 10 on a consistent basis across many different areas each day. But the reason I do that is because numbers don't lie. Numerical numbers do not lie. So, for example, if I'm saying to you, well, okay, you might not right now feel any better about this particular challenge that we're working on at this moment, because you can't Amazon Prime your new life. You might think you can, but you can't. But what you can do is you can work on numbers. And so, for example, if I said to you, listen, Phil, I want you to do as many push-ups as you can tomorrow within a space of 2 minutes, and I want you to tell me what they are. And then I want you to repeat that for the next 7 days, right? When you get to day 7, I've got a good feeling, mate, you're going to be doing more than you did on day number 1. Now, your body might need a rest, some would say, but not if you're just doing 2 minutes a day on press-ups, right?
Correct.
So what does that mean? Well, that means that you can see progress. It's physically there on the page, on paper. It's proof. It's facts. And so for me as a coach, that's leverage. That's saying what I'm giving you works, right? But it's also saying, look how quick we can get wins. And so if you drop little pieces like that in physiologically into people's lifestyles, then naturally they start to ask themselves, okay, what else could I maybe overcome if I was just to put this tiny, weeny little meaningless, because that's how they think at first, habit into my day or into routine. So it opens up possibility. And then that allows me as a coach to really start to unlock many different segments and areas into people's lives, because now I've got leverage and they've got proof. And so now they're excited.
Brilliant. Yeah. Every action you take is a vote for the person you wish to become, as James Clear said.
Yeah. I love James Clear, Atomic Habits. Great book.
Yeah. So being this is an investing themed podcast, tell us, Tim, how you could take these four pillars of success and kind of utilize them into an investment strategy of some sort. So I don't know whether you invest. I think we've probably talked about it in the past. Maybe you invest in yourself. But in terms of financial investments, how could you take these four pillars and really kind of utilize them to give yourself an upper hand in investing?
Well, this is a question that I get asked pretty often, if I'm being honest. And the great thing about the four pillars of success is that you can apply it to so many different areas of your life, finance, income being one of those. And I would always say, you know, be completely honest about why it is that you're about to invest in this particular thing. Could be a property, could be a training course, could be a stock, a bond, anything, trust, doesn't matter. What is the real reason behind why you're doing it in the first place? That's the first step. Secondly is, it's going to take some courage, you know, because investing is risky. Every investment comes at a risk. And yes, you know, some are more volatile, let's say, than others. Some are more riskier than others. But ultimately, it's going to take a bit of courage. It's going to take a bit of courage for you to step in. There's always going to be some form of fear. Is this going to work out? Is this going to be the right thing for me? You know, if I go in heavy here, will it pay off? Will I get the reward? So you're always going to have some form of fear based around a decision when you're investing, because there's not complete certainty around it. But as you know, when you invest, you should fully commit to that investment. And I suppose you should always be looking at long term. You should always be looking at how it's going to perform over a longer period of time. It is a marathon. It's not an in and out It's not a quick return. It's always looking way past of what's happening initially. Maybe you need to look at different patterns that's taking place in the marketplace. Maybe you need to speak to certain people. But ultimately, if you think that you're going to get a quick win off of an investment, you're usually wrong. Now, I say usually, you also can get quick wins. But ultimately, if you set yourself up with a mindset of the long game, you're going to get a much better return and feel much better about it, because you won't be always checking what your investment's doing. And lastly, but not least, you need to take that action. You know, you need to start. You know, most of the people that I know have started investing very, very small. They've taken the required steps needed at the time that they needed to invest, and they've just started very, very small, and now they're just compounding and compounding and compounding. And I believe that's a full breakdown, I suppose, of how these four pillars can really help in terms of an investment strategy.
And the final question from me today, Tim, is what is the best advice you've ever heard or received?
I think the best piece of advice that I've ever been given or ever heard is the major key to your better future is you. And what I love about that piece of advice is that it really encapsulates that you have to take responsibility for yourself, that it all comes down to you at the end of the day. It doesn't matter what you listen to, doesn't matter what you learn, it matters what you apply, it matters what you do with it, it matters how you take action on the things that you've learned, that you've been taught. And it really goes back to the first pillar, which is, you know, getting honest with yourself about why you are where you are. And when you do that, it's enlightening, because it means that you can start with a fresh, clean slate. And it also means it doesn't matter what happens outside of you, you always get to make decisions from within. And that's what I love about that piece of advice.
Great. All right. Well, Tim, I think we've talked long enough. I think it's been a compelling chat. And obviously, we wish you well with your next book that you just alluded to. I look forward to looking at that one myself. But obviously, in the meantime, people can get The Art of Unlearning book available from your website, timcooperacademy.com. And I'll just say, Tim Cooper, mentor and life coach, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's been great.
And on to our second guest this week. We're joined by Oliver Friesen, CEO of Golden Metal Resources. Welcome back, Oliver.
Hey, gents. How you guys doing?
Yeah, all good. Thanks. So you recently updated the market regarding the Pilot Mountain project, believed to hold the largest undeveloped tungsten resource in the US, with additional potential in garnet deposits. Historical data and exploration suggest approximately 40% of mineralized intervals at Pilot Mountain contain garnet, potentially significant for project economics. The company plans to appoint a garnet specialist for detailed analysis and is finalizing drill permit applications. You highlighted the unexpected economic implications of garnet recovery alongside tungsten, emphasizing potential cost reduction in processing. Further studies will explore the impact on project economics. So a bit of a surprise find there, Oliver, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's funny. It's a surprise in that the significance of the amount really surprised us. We always knew there was a significant component of garnet at Pilot Mountain, but we really never took the steps to go and quantify it. No one did previously. So, you know, for instance, one of the deposits is called garnet. So we knew there was garnet, but to actually sit down, you know, bring in some really smart people in the space and to start to quantify the scale of what we have here in terms of the garnet, that's what really took us by surprise. So a very exciting development. And I think really it could be a game changer for the you know, future of this project.
Yeah. So just talk the listeners through what garnet is. I believe it's a group of silicate minerals, but talk about some of their, you know, industrial and commercial applications. You know, you talk about potential blasting for abrasion, water filtration. Just talk through how important it is to have a domestic produce of garnet.
Yeah, so there's two main types of garnets. There's gemstone grade garnet, which is something that you know, I might put in a ring or a necklace. But what we're dealing with here is smaller scale, finer grained, what's called industrial garnet, which is something that's used mostly in the abrasive industry. So when they're blasting old you know, oil wells and in the mining space as well, trying to clean things off, they use these really fine kind of grain garnets because their hardness to clean these various applications. So it's mostly used in the abrasive space, and that's what we're targeting here. And what's interesting about the garnet space specifically is a lot of usage in the abrasive space right now is utilized via what's called silicone slag, which I think is a byproduct of the oil and gas industry. So they're blasting these abrasive applications with this silicone, which actually ends up being an environmental hazard because of this silicon dust that it creates. So actually, a lot of companies are now switching over to garnet, industrial garnet, because it's much greener. So there's a massive green implication as well. And on top of that, the U.S. is actually a net importer of garnet, and they get most of their garnet from overseas. So they're actively looking for a domestic source. So that's another way we think we can fit in here with this garnet potential here at Pilot Mountain.
Yeah, so I see some paper and also non-slip surfaces on some of the research I've done as well, which is very interesting. So looking at the RNS in a bit more detail, there was a figure of 40% mentioned on there of the total 12.53 million tons of the mineral resource estimate. Just grabbing my calculator here now, if I work out 40% of that figure, and then that comes to, a minute, is this right? So it says 5 million tons, circa 5 million tons of garnet. And then if you look at the number mentioned, where I think you said that domestic garnet at a premium price of $220 per ton. So that, wait a minute, I'm going to have to turn the calculator on. It's on the other side. I've run out of real estate. multiply that by the 220, and I get to circa $1.1 billion. Is that right, or have I got the numbers wrong?
No. So, I mean, in the RNS, we need to be careful because obviously more work needs to be done to quantify a lot of this. So we can't actually make those calculations in the RNS ourselves. However, based on the numbers that you mentioned, I mean, those numbers do sound correct. So, the scale here is quite significant. It's not a resource. Obviously, we need to do more work to actually quantify this as a resource. What you'd be referring to as potential, contained garnet. But yeah, 40%, we've gone through a lot of work to come up with that number. We don't just kind of pick that number out of the air. A lot of the test work that was done, so these are kind of representative samples that were sent to the labs for advanced metallurgical work, actually came up to about 50% garnet. So the 40% number that we quantified is based on historical drill logs and all the test work that we had done. So it's a number that we feel quite confident about. But like I said, we need to do more work to classify that as a resource. But I think with the numbers you put up before there, I think the main takeaway here is that it looks to be pretty significant.
So Oliver, the situation with the garnets, how are they positioned in this resource? Is it in sands? Is it in rocks? Is it what is it?
Yeah, so what we're looking at Pilot Mountain is a skarn deposit. And skarn deposits, one of the main formation minerals when you create these skarn deposits is actually garnet. So it's quite common to find some quantity of garnet within these skarn systems, which tells you you are in a skarn. But obviously the quantity of the amount of garnet can vary from skarn to skarn. So what we're seeing here is garnet in the actual skarn deposit, which is where we find our tungsten, copper, silver, and zinc. So it's hard rock, it's in situ. And I think the thing that really has me excited here is not just the quantity that that Phil calculated for us, but I think the way that this fits into the flow sheet is where I'm probably the most excited, because the work that we've done so far, andradite is slightly magnetic, which means we can, I caveat this by saying we need to do more work, but indications so far are that we could actually remove the majority of the garnet prior to grinding and flotation. So what that means is if we were in a mining scenario, we'd blast the rock, we'd crush it to a certain size, and then at that point we could actually magnetic or gravity separate out, say, the 40% garnet, because it is magnetic and it has a different density than the surrounding rock, which pulls, let's say 40% out of the amount of material that needs to go through the actual grinding and then flotation process. So that 40% or whatever that final number ends up being, we're pulling that out very early in the process, which means there's a lot less wear and tear on the circuits going forward. So that product is going to land. It's actually going to save us money to produce this garnet, which, as you can probably guess in the ultimate economics of the project, if that ends up being the case, which we believe it will be, that's why we consider this to be a bit of a game changer.
There was some figures floating around that it was worth 1.1 million in ground valuation in terms of what it would be worth. But what sort of valuation have we got in ground on the current JORC tungsten silver zinc that is in Pilot Mountain?
Yeah, so I mean, when it comes to kind of in situ metal values, it's not something that the company will go out and quote. We just need to be cautious about certain things that are said and disclosures and things like that at this stage. However, anyone with a calculator could go out and calculate themselves. So What I can say is that at current metal values, the tungsten, copper, silver, and zinc equates to approximately about $1.5 billion US in situ. And once again, that's not a number that is coming from the company. I'm just saying that's a number that you could, anyone could take a calculator and come up with.
Yeah. Okay. So the reason why I was asking you that question, and as you said, not really from a figure from the company, how they've been proven up and how they've been RNS'd, is that the garnet actually is now looking at being 40% of potential money in ground valuation for Pilot Mountain.
Yeah, and that's, you know, internally, that's kind of what we're looking at here is how valuable the garnet could be in relation to the other products. And like you said, you know, a lot more work needs to be done here to properly quantify this and come up with more definitive figures. But early indications are pointing to the fact that this garnet potential here is very significant. And in the RNS, you know, we very much cover that. In my quote, I very much talk about how positive of a development this is and how potentially it could be a potential game changer here for the economics going forward here in a mining scenario. So yeah, everything you're saying is kind of what we're thinking of behind the scenes here and why we're so excited about this development.
Yeah, I mean, you basically now sort of moved without proving up more tungsten, which I think is obviously one of the things that you wish to do. You've moved from sort of 1.5 billion to 2.5 billion or thereabouts in terms of in situ value of metals. Now, we know, and we must say to the people listening, that this is by no means a valuation that you should use for a valuation of a company, because the reality is it costs a significant amount of money to get the stuff out of the ground, a lot of capex to get to that point to even get it out of the ground, and then we don't know what the metal prices will be at that time, even though ultimately tungsten especially is looking extremely attractive as there just isn't enough. So I mean, this must be, I suppose, the question I was thinking to myself before we started this podcast was that, did you imagine, you know, 6 months ago or longer now, because you obviously listed on my birthday last year, did you imagine that you'd be in this position in Pilot Mountain? Because, and not only Pilot Mountain, Garfield, because it just seems like sort of a bit, wow, it's a bit hard to imagine that this would be the situation you'd be in.
Yeah, no, obviously we're really pleased here. And we've been able to really progress this company in the sort of 8-9 months since we listed on your birthday there, Kev. But, you know, Garfield's obviously been, a great surprise for us, and that continues to deliver. And we'll certainly have more news out on that asset in due course here. But, Pilot Mountain, this whole time that we've been pushing forward Garfield has been moving forward in the background as well. A lot of this work has gone into understanding this garnet potential because it is so significant. And on top of that, obviously, we put out, some really exciting IP results. We've signed an LOI offtake with the largest tungsten processing company. So, yeah, we're thrilled with the progress that we've made so far. And kind of what I say to our listeners and investors is that I think we're just getting started here. There's so much more potential. And the more work we do, the better things look. So, what we've been able to accomplish in 8 months, has obviously challenged us to see what we can do in the next 12 months and 2 years and so on and so forth. And we think there's a lot of value we can continue to add to the business here as we push everything, all these assets forward in tandem.
Yeah, no, it is great. And, if you don't know the story of Golden Metal Resources, then I'd suggest you click back and listen to one of the other podcasts and some of the technical stuff that Oliver has put out on YouTube and on the Telegram group, because it really is very interesting what's been set up here. And yeah, we wish you good luck going forward.
And I'll probably say I look forward to welcoming you back soon, but I know for a fact you will be back soon, the amount of frequency that you put out these news releases, Oliver. So thanks for coming on again. And we'll say Oliver Friesen, CEO of Golden Metal Resources, thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks, gents. I agree. We'll definitely be chatting again soon here.
Always good to catch up with Oliver, isn't it? And then what a great RNS that was in the week.
Yeah, it's not often you say there's potentially a billion plus value of in-ground material. Now, obviously, that is not what's going to be to the bottom line of Golden Metal Resources. But I mean, I think even conservatively, 100 million to 200 million pounds to their bottom line over a period of 15 to 20 years is phenomenal. Like, 10 million pounds a year, we're only at a market cap of about 12. So, and that's just the garnet without the tungsten and the copper and Garfield and the golds that they've got and the lithium that they've got. I mean, it really is turning into a bit of a paradise of
It's turning into a banking company, isn't it? When you start, when you know, so as you say, Garfield's delivered, and obviously Pilot Mountain now, the latest update with this 40% number, as you say, of the 12.53 million tons. So, you know, it gives you around about that five million if you do the maths, as you say. And even if you're being conservative and even just take 20, 30% of that valuation, that sort of fag packet calculation, it comes in at a massive, you know, $200-300 million. So, yeah, very exciting times for that company for sure. And there was also, did you see that there's some good news out this week for Powermetal Resources? A couple of announcements, wasn't there? Both of them.
Yeah.
One of them was around the Malopo Farms complex drilling commencing on Wednesday, which I thought was excellent. And then there was also the one on the Tatti project, where sampling confirms extensive gold. We caught up with Sean in the week, or you did, and here's what he had to say.
Thanks for your time, Sean. Just wanted to ask you what was happening with the RNS today and how that fits in with the whole Powermetal Resources.
Hi, Kevin. Really exciting announcement from our point of view. I mean, these are, well, they're exploration results which cover extensive soil sampling which we've undertaken at Tatti in 2023. And they confirm the presence of three significant gold in soil geochemical anomalies, which is proving further continuity along the 8 kilometer gold trend at Tatti that we've previously talked about. 446 samples with some great results, which I'm sure people have seen, three of which returned greater than 500 parts per billion, and some of them even better than that. So really exciting to take to the next stage. We are pushing forward with commercial discussions regarding the potential for small-scale mining at Cherished Hope, but also we will be looking at continuing exploration work, which we're excited to be talking about as soon as we're able to do that. But I think fundamentally, these are really quite remarkable results. It's building on what has been a process of excellent work at Tatti with some really great findings, and we're more confident than ever that this is a project of very significant value for us. So looking forward to the next stage and hopefully progressing the discussions which we are undertaking at the moment, and more to follow. But, I hope shareholders are, like me, very pleased with what they've seen here, and we look forward to talking more in the future.
Yeah, and there was another good RNS on Wednesday from First Class Metals, where they announced the results of a mobile metal ion soil sampling program, as well as accompanying rock grab samples on the company's Zigzag property. And we caught up with Mark Sale, CEO, in the week, and this is what he had to say.
Hi, Phil, Kevin, the Sunday Roast listeners. We're really buoyed by the recent assay results from the MMI, Mobile Metal Iron Soil Sampling, because not only does it further validate our belief that the drilling in that core zone of 400 metres hasn't closed off the extensions to the east and west. In fact, the soil sampling says definitively that there are lithium anomalies 100 meters east and west of the furthermost drill holes. But not only that, but I think the potentially head-turning event is the fact that we now have validation, geochemical validation, that there probably is a second sub-parallel structure a couple of hundred meters south of the main zone. Hey, they might be connected, it might be a spur, but there's irrefutable evidence now that it exists. And some grab samples south again could infer that there's a third spur, but it's early days for that. But I think we're, as I say, quite rightly further enthused about the Zigzag property's potential. And let's not forget that we still have to get the assays back from the drill core, which we are expecting in the next maybe week. So there's a lot to look forward to on Zigzag. And on the basis of the exceptional results from the soil sampling and the anticipated results from the drill core, we are going to initiate discussions with the First Nations in order that we can apply for a further exploration permit so that we can expand our area of stripping and exploration. It's all to play for. I mean, it really is such an important aspect of First Class's development, even though we've got three other veritable properties other than Zigzag: Sunbeam Gold, North Hemlo with the gold, and the joint venture with Palladium One, as well as the huge shear zone on Essa. So, yeah, we're going to bring one of these properties to a point of monetization this year. I feel quite sure about that.
Okay, so other movers this week. I think the best mover today, again, and it just seems to keep on delivering this one, has been Helium One, hasn't it? Have you? I mean, obviously you've seen the news there. I think it's about 78 or 80% on the week. It's been bouncing all over the place. It's been down to one. They announced the placing on Wednesday to raise 4.7 million. Now, I mean, you could argue the share price was down at sort of 0.2 pence only 6 weeks or 5 weeks ago. So for it to be able to pull off another raise around when the share price was around the 2.1 pence at something like a 30% discount was pretty impressive. What do you make of it and the way that that share is kind of the volume churn? I mean, I think that they issued another kind of 300 million shares issued. It's obviously diluting the company. There's going to be circa about 3.7 billion shares outstanding. The market cap's around the 80 million. That's not taken into the new shares, which will be obviously issued. But those shares were churned on the Thursday, would you believe, or on the Wednesday. They were literally churned straight away.
Yeah, well, people were going in to make a profit, weren't they? You know, it's, I heard Charles talk about it in one of the groups, and he basically said it's musical chairs. And when the music stops, the person holding the shares might not be very happy, because it's a trader's dream at the minute, and has been since the 0.25 raise. That aside, the RNS was obviously good.
Yeah.
They found helium.
Helium to 4.7% to surface. So it was almost a dream.
Do we know the size of the resource? Do we know how easy it is going to continue to get it out of the ground? Do we know? We don't know any of those things. So not being a naysayer, but yeah, you've got another 313 million shares to add to that 80 million. And then you're talking about a market cap of in excess of £100 million now.
Yeah.
With more cash, granted, they've got now probably £5 million of cash. Don't know. Make your own mind up, because the Helium One made us look silly when we talked about it 2 weeks ago, when we thought it was overvalued at a penny, so, or less than a penny. So yeah, good luck. It's just really the only thing I can say.
Absolutely. No,
honestly.
So what else? I mean, there's been quite a few announcements. There's Extract. There was an update on the Zambian Copper joint venture and strategy. And I know you obviously caught up with Martin and Colin down there. There was also obviously great RNS from Jubilee, which went through their proposal for the you know, to expand their operations at Rowan and all the various other sort of copper, basically the waste, tailings to waste in Zambia, which was great RNS.
Yeah, we put a podcast out on Thursday.
Yeah,
for Indaba. So just point everybody to that if you want to know anything about Extract, Galileo, African Pioneer, Bazant, Kendrick Resources, basically the five companies that Colin heads, then please listen to that. I think quite a few people had listened to the Indaba thing. Also, Jason Brewer is on there with his companies that he's going to be taking over, which is four different companies. And Aterian as well, who I met down there. Also met Yura, met the CEO down there. He was a nice guy. So we're going to maybe have him on at some point in terms of the guest, because it's an interesting proposition. You know, the restart in a huge emerald mine. And yeah, it looks sort of imminent that it's going to be starting to produce emeralds over the next number of months. I said in that I tried to get Byring Strategic as well. They were there at Indaba. They had a stand. Just didn't manage to get Lincoln, unfortunately, because everybody was busy and around. So again, I'm very, very optimistic about that one. Please check out. We haven't done an interview or anything with them as yet, but we picked them as one of our stocks of 2024 in the five gold rings. Because of them taking over this Glencore site for lime in Zambia, like if Zambia takes off as everybody expects with the amount of copper, there's going to be a hell of a lot of lime required for the processing of all of this copper.
Yeah,
and they're going to be in the box seat because they're going to have it there in Zambia. So yeah, I'm very optimistic about that.
That's a good one. Yeah, there was also another one. Cobra Resources had an RNS out on, it was Wednesday, which basically talked about sonic drilling commencing at the Boland Rare Earths project. And we talked to their CEO previous, I think about a month ago, It looks quite excited, doesn't it? It's all about this technique of this proving the scale, grade concentration, and in situ recovery potential for these rare earth project prospects at Wadena. And it looks like, I think they've done a sort of total of 5 sonic core holes that are going to be planned, that are going to enable Cobra to determine the concentration of these ionic rare earth mineralization on sand clay boundaries. So that one looks very exciting as they start to commence and their operations for 2024. So that's what one to...
Yeah, I met Dan, who's the non-executive director of Cobra down here as well. So I had breakfast with him one day. He was very excited to talk about Cobra. And also another one that is actually listed on Aquis, which is HF1. And he sent me a video on it as well. It's very interesting. So I, again, need to do a bit more digging on that one. Maybe we'll do an interview with them at some point. But we'll see. Both Cobra and that one look like interesting technology within the mining sector as well. You know, they're innovators, if you like. I think both of those. And if the things work, I think it could do really well.
Yeah. Did you see Greatland Gold also had an announcement on the successful completion of the WA Government Exploration Intensive Scheme co-funding drilling program at the Meadows Gold Prospect within the 100% owned Ernest Giles project? And 2 diamond core holes were completed, which revealed anomalous mineralization of 8 meters at 0.12 grams per ton gold from 316 meters. So I guess they're going to guide whether there's some sort of systematic reverse circulation drill program and ground induced polarization survey later on this year. Sean said it's how significant the milestone and the project's prospectivity, emphasizing plans for future exploration or further exploration, including extensive drilling this year. So that was really, really encouraging to see them actually getting ahead with the EIS scheme that was co-funded from the Western Australian government. That was really good.
Yeah. I mean, I heard a few comments on the groups that they've come up with a duster in Greatland Gold, and I just didn't respond, to be honest. But I mean, it's not a duster. They found some gold. The intention was not to find a huge strike of gold at this point. That was not the intention of this drill, though obviously that would have been nice. There's a hell of a lot more drilling and going ahead to find out whether this is a prospect that's worth it in the long run or not than these two holes. So we'll see. I'm sure we'll have Sean on in the not too distant to give us a better idea of what he thinks in terms of this particular one.
Good. Well, I think we've done it to death, haven't we? But the rugby to look forward to at the weekend. It's Wales, England, I believe, isn't it? So any other sport you've been watching anything while you've been down there?
No, the LIV Golf is on this weekend in Las Vegas.
Okay.
I was interested in the first one. But I registered to watch the LIV Golf down here in South Africa, and they want money off me down here. But in Egypt, it's free. So I won't be watching until I go back. I think, anyway, that's the way it's set up.
Yeah. I hope we've all enjoyed this show. It's been something a bit different, and listening to Tim wax lyrical, and you know, hopefully it'll help some of you out if you do need that sort of thing, and if you want to reach out to him, you can. We'll put the link in description to his website in the description of his podcast, and you can hunt him down. So ultimately, we just want to say thanks for listening, and ultimately, hit the subscribe icon and the bell icon, then you get future notifications of future episodes.
Yeah, again, I reiterate what you said. I hope you find some usefulness in what was said. And we thought we'd put something just a little bit different for this Sunday roost and see. From a mining perspective, please listen to the Indaba thing that we put out on the Thursday if you're interested in any of those companies. And we look forward to speaking to you next week.
Safe flight back, and I'll see you down in Namibia for next week's show.
Yeah, we'll be in Namibia next week too. We'll be in Namibia for Friday, aren't we? So we'll record it.
Come live and direct from Windhoek next Friday.
Yep, very good.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.